Den anden radio har mødt Million Bellet, der forsker i fødevaresystemer, biodiversitet og landbrug på Stockholms Resilience Center. Million Bellet er etiopier og har stor erfaring inden for både foreningsarbejde og praktisk anvendelse af forskning. Million Bellet er en af grundlæggerne bag Alliancen for Fødevaresuverænitet i Afrika, AFSA, der er aktiv i flere afrikanske lande.
Maybe we need to rethink the way how we think about efficiency and how we think about agricultural landscapes. They don't provide just food, they provide much more than that. How can we bring multifunctionality more into the global debate?
Million Bellet er forsker på Stockholm Resilience Center, og han stammer selv fra Etiopien i Østafrika, et land på mere end 1 million kvadratkilometer, det vil sige 26 gange så stort som Danmark. Etiopien er domineret af to bjergeområder, men er meget varieret. Klimaet er tropisk, og der er både meget frugtbare regioner og ørken. Her er også meget store græsningsområder, som bruges til kvægavl eller pastoralt landbrug, og Etiopien går for at være det land i Afrika, som har den allerstørste kvægeproduktion. Etiopien er stort, men landet har også en befolkning på mere end 100 millioner mennesker, der skal skaffes mad til. Million Bellet har et stort engagement i både landbrugsudvikling og i Etiopien. Jeg mødte ham i lufthavnen på vej til en konference og bad ham om at beskrive den problematik, han er optaget af.
It's a commercial based agriculture is producing for the market. That's what is the main thrust. Because the bigger narrative is that Ethiopia lacks production, lacks food, so we need to produce more. We need to produce more. It's not only producing more, it's producing for the market. That's the main narrative. And for you to do that, the narrative is you have to use agrochemicals, and also you have to use improved varieties. And the farmers have to learn new techniques of farming. So that's a bigger narrative for Ethiopian farming. Actually on ground, there's not enough amount of seeds to distribute to farmers, and they have their own. So the seed diversity is very high, but the farmer's seed is considered as backward, as not productive. So the direction in policy is to give farmers improved varieties, improved varieties of seeds. So basically, that's how agriculture is defined in Ethiopia.
Men i realiteten så er der mange steder, hvor der ikke er nogen forædlede afgrøder ude på landet hos de lokale farmere. Og i forvejen produceres faktisk rigtig mange slags afgrøder og frø, så der er stor diversitet. Men den nationale politik opfatter det eksisterende landbrug som gammeldags. Der skal tilføres nye forædlede sorter. Er GMO-afgrøder eller genmodificerede afgrøder tilladt i Etiopien?
When the country has accepted the Cartagena Protocol and produced its own law, then it's on paper it's accepted. But the law was very stringent. It's a very strong law. But through the push by GM proponents and supported by outside countries, then the law was softened. So basically it is allowed, but under regulation.
Da Etiopien accepterede den såkaldte Katarina-protokol, så kunne landet etablere sin egen lovgivning, og den var ret stringent. Men fordi der har været så meget pres fra andre lande, så er lovgivningen siden blødt op. Så ja, GMO-afgrøder er tilladt, men i begrænset omfang. I juni 2018 har Etiopien tilladt GMO-sorter i forhold til bomuld og majs. Landet er storproducent af majs, måske Afrikas største. Men hvad er ellers de vigtigste afgrøder?
The main crops are teff. We have this odd grain called it's very little. The size of the grain, it's much more less than of wheat, even sorghum. It's less than sorghum in size. It's teff, but it's very productive. It's more food from 100 kilogram of teff than maize or wheat or other crops. It's very healthy, and that's the main crop. But we have wheat, We have over 100 wheat diversity also. We have sorghum, we have barley, we have the beans, you know, the bean crops, we have oil crops, you know. The diversity is very high in Ethiopia. And in some parts of the country, there is also a production of rice.
Der er tef, som er frø fra en græsart eller hirse, og som bruges til madpandekager. Den er meget udbredt og meget produktiv. Der er også andre typer hirse. Og du får meget mere ud af 100 kilo tef, end af tilsvarende mængde hvede eller majs. Tef er den allervigtigste afgrøde. Men vi dyrker også hvede, byg, majs og mange andre ting. Vi har bønneafgrøder, vi har olieafgrøder. Der er stor alsidighed. I nogle dele af Etiopien dyrkes også ris.
Yeah. You have milk production, you have breeding of cattle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, every family in Ethiopia that has cattle. Not every family. I mean, cattle is part of the agricultural system in Ethiopia. So if you have cattle, then you can farm. If you don't have cattle, then you borrow. Most families produce chickens, they produce sheep, goats. They also have livestock, you know. So if you have money, you buy livestock, basically. It's a cattle raiding country. And the middle is highland. This is it's an agricultural area, and it's surrounded by the lowlands. And you have pastorals. And the main trade of pastorals is through is cattle.
Er der mælkeproduktion og kvægopdræt? Ja, også det. En hver landbrugsfamilie har kvæg. Det vil sige, det har alle ikke. Men kvæg er en integreret del af landbrugssystemet. Og hvis man ikke selv har kvæg, ja, så låner man. De fleste farmere producerer også kyllinger, de har får og geder, og hvis man har penge, så investerer man i kvæg. I den mellemste del af Etiopien, der er meget pastoralisme, altså kvægavlere, som flytter rundt med deres flokke. Hvordan kan det være, at du arbejder med fødevaresystemer?
I wanted to understand what food system is in our context, and I want to understand how it is changing. So I'm using a methodology called mapping. You know, mapping allows you to look at the past. So you mobilize the memory of the people, you know, which is very critical. So many researchers do not consider the memory of people as important or the knowledge of people as important. So I wanted to look at the knowledge of people, the past knowledge of people, and I want them to look at the present, and I wanted them to compare the two. And I want them to think about the future also.
Jo, jeg vil gerne forstå, hvad et fødevaresystem er, og hvordan det forandrer sig. Jeg arbejder også med kortlægning, og på den måde mobiliserer man de gamle farmers viden. Vigtigt, fordi mange forskere ikke regner de gamles kundskaber for noget som helst. Så vil jeg gerne have, at I ser på nutiden og sammenligner, også i forhold til fremtiden.
So I chose three places. One was the southwest of the country, one on the southeast. Southwest was a forest community. Southeast was an agro-pastoral community, and close to the capital city, in the middle, was a completely agricultural community. So that these three communities, it's not you know, a good sample, because you could you know, if you be careful about it, you can choose sample. But that was not the idea. It was just to, you know, the first trip was to have a scoping visit and understand how farming or the food system is changing at the local level at these three places. I also went to these three places because I've already rapport with the local community, with the local government, and for research you need also trust, you know, with the local people. So I looked at the food system. Food system comprises in our context the food production landscape, which basically means the forests, the rivers, the soil, and other wildlife, you know. That's a food production landscape where food is produced. And you have the farm. In the farm you have the soil, the input that you use, the draft animals that you use, labor, you know, you can ask questions around these subsystems, including the seed. Then there is harvest and storage. It has its own system, as a subsystem, there's a lot of story. And household processing, it's a lot also in at the household level. And finally, there is a marketing side of it. So in our case, for example, there's no packaging, retailing or distribution. It's not like that in these communities. So there is no life of the local community that you don't see. It's quite comprehensive. It's a system analysis, system looking.
Jeg valgte tre lokaliteter. En lokalitet mod sydvest i et område med skovbrug. En lokalitet mod sydøst. Det er et pastoralsamfund med kvæg. Og så en lokalitet midt i landet. Et rent landbrugsområde. De tre samfund udgjorde ikke noget repræsentativt udsnit i forhold til landet. Det handlede om at forske i eksempler på, hvordan fødevaresystemer på lokalt niveau forandrer sig. Jeg valgte også de tre steder, fordi jeg kender de lokale myndigheder i forvejen, og det er vigtigt at have tillid omkring sig. Et landskab for fødevareproduktion omfatter helt grundlæggende skoven, floderne, jorden, de vilde dyr, etc. Og så har du gården, og her er der også jord, marker, såsæd, input, trækdyr, husdyr, og der er rum til opbevaring af afgrøder, til transformation, og endelig er der området omkring markedsføring. I de tre samfund, der her taler om, foregår der ikke nogen større transformation og pakning med henblik på salg. Ude på landet kan du se det hele.
So it's you know, I'm an Ethiopian. I'm very much concerned about the future of the country, the future of the people. So it was a huge concern for me after looking at these three cases. I could see that the food system is not going in the right direction.
What does that mean?
Because of the usage of chemicals, then it's impacting on the health of the people. And the chemicals are also impacting on the soil. You know, the soil is getting compact. So slowly but surely they are getting locked into a system of production. And the seeds are not performing very well. The improved varieties, they can give you a lot of productivity the first year, second year a little, and third year very poor. So they are susceptible to pests. So the farmers, to get a lot of product, they have to put more and more and more pests, and that actually poisons the crops also. And you can see how it will affect the health of consumers also.
Jeg er selv i Etiopia, og jeg er meget engageret i fremtiden for mit land og for befolkningen. Jeg har kunnet se, at fødevaresystemet ikke udviklede sig i den rigtige retning. Og hvad betyder det? Jo, for det første er der anvendelsen af agrokemiske midler. De påvirker folks sundhed og påvirker også jorden, som bliver kompakt. Langsomt låses farmerne fast i en produktion og et system. Men de forædlede sorter giver kun et godt udbytte det første år. Andet år er nogenlunde, men tredje år er meget ringe. Og så er afgrøderne ekstra følsomme over for sygdomme, og på den vis tvinges landbrugerne til at bruge flere og flere pesticider. Afgrøderne bliver forgiftet af dem, og med tiden påvirker det også forbrugerne. Men er farmerne bevidste om det? Det kan jo være svært at se.
In their own way. They say that previously you have to tie the mouth of cattle so that they don't eat the leftover, the hay. But when you use a lot of chemicals, even they don't like it. Even donkeys actually, when they go through the farm, they take, you know? So you have to fight with your donkey not to finish your harvest. But this time, since the chemical is too much, then the donkeys don't even want it. So they express it that way, and they could see the health impact. They tell you that some members of the local community have experienced this, have experienced that. They are pushing themselves, and also they are being pushed by that due to the main narrative that I told you. You know, we have to produce more, produce for the market. To produce more, you have to use agrochemicals and fruit varieties. So there is a health impact, there's environmental impact that they observe. Culturally, they could see also some change, because seeds are related very much with culture. The kind of seeds that they use when a woman is pregnant, the kind of seeds that they use during some rituals or ceremonies, the kind of seed that they use for children to make porridge and whatever. All that has its own cultural connotations, When they want to prepare a local drink, for example, a local beer, then they have a variety that they choose.
De er bevidste om det på deres egen måde. De siger for eksempel, at tidligere var man nødt til at tøjre kvæget, når der blev høstet, så dyrene ikke spiste halmen. Men når der bruges kemiske midler, kan de ikke lide det. Det samme med hundene. Tidligere kunne det være svært at høste de forskellige afgrøder i fred for dem, men hundene kan heller ikke lide det. Og så oplever man også, at folks sundhed bliver påvirket. På den måde skubber farmerne sig selv ind i systemet. Men det sker på baggrund af fortællinger om, at landbruget skal være effektivt, og der skal produceres bare mere til markedet. Og det med at bruge nye forædlede sorter giver også forandringer i kulturen. Folk har været vant til at bruge bestemte afgrøder, f.eks. til børn, til gravide kvinder og til visse ritualer. Hvad mener du, der bør gøres i forhold til at skabe en anden udvikling i fødevaresystemet?
I think the most important thing is to challenge the narrative, the main narrative. There is another way. There is another way of producing, and farmers know that from their experience. Doesn't mean that they don't need to change some things. They need to learn the application of some techniques, and they need to diversify also their incomes through other means. But there are other ways, and we need to work also at the policy level. That's why we started the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa. So we have identified this policy environment. It's just to give you how policy is developed, at the CADAP level, this Common African Agricultural Development Program. It's called CADAP, It's an African Union program which was designed in 2003 in Mozambique, Maputo. It's called the Maputo Declaration. In that, each of the African countries have agreed to use 10% of their income for agriculture. So who controlled that process? I think the Africans say we did. So, and also there is an Abuja Declaration in 2006 where governments have agreed to increase their usage of artificial fertilizers. Because it's understood that in order to increase productivity, you have to use a lot of fertilizers. When you say why, and the answer is look at Europe, look at the USA. They use a lot of these chemicals. If you compare in terms of percentage, the usage of agrochemicals in Europe and in Africa, Africa is 4 or 5 or 6%, it is 150%, you see? So we need to increase our usage to reach at to a level where, we feed ourselves also as other continents have fed themselves. So that is a narrative.
Jo, det er vigtigt at udfordre den store fortælling og sige, at der er andre måder at drive landbrug på. Der skal arbejdes på det politiske niveau. Det var derfor, vi skabte AFSA. AFSA står for Alliancen for Fødevaresuverænitet i Afrika og blev etableret tilbage i 2008. Den officielle fortælling har som politisk baggrund en deklaration i den afrikanske union. Den såkaldte Comprehensive Africa Agriculture Development Program, CADEP. Den blev underskrevet i 2003 i Mozambique og kaldes også for Maputo-erklæringen. Her forpligtede de afrikanske lande sig til at bruge 10% af statens indtægter på landbrug. Men herefter kom en anden deklaration i 2006, hvorved at landene ville investere i kunstgødning. Det fortælles, at det er helt nødvendigt, fordi Afrika som kontinent skal blive i stand til at føde sig selv.
So, in these places, these policy spaces at the continental level are crowded by a range of actors. There are philanthrocapitalists, the philanthropic capitalists are there, and you have the development agencies, you know. As an example, you can call, talk about Danish Aid or SIDA, Swedish SIDA. Their support for agriculture to these African countries goes to what kind of agriculture? To high input agriculture or to agroecological ways of agriculture? And somebody did an analysis. Michel Pimbe, I don't know whether you know him or not. He's a French scientist. He's in the UK at Coventry University. So their analysis showed that the aid to African countries from the FID actually goes to high input agriculture, not to agroecology. For the funding for agroecology is close to 1%. If we include, you know, any, might be 5%. So the philanthropic capitalists, government aid money through the aid agencies and government direct funding in companies, all that have agreed that the bigger problem in Africa is productivity. So that's their main narrative.
Det politiske rum er fyldt med aktører. Der er filantropiske kapitalister, der er bistandsgivere, som for eksempel danske Danida og svenske SIDA, og de støtter landbrugsprogrammer. Men hvad er det for en slags landbrug, de giver bistand til? Er det til landbrug med store, kostbare input, eller til agroøkologisk landbrug? Michel Pimbert, direktør for Center for Agroøkologi, Vand og Resiliens i Coventry i England, har lavet en analyse, der viser, at kun ca. 1% af de totale bistandsinvesteringer i landbrug går til agroøkologisk landbrug. Alle aktører, bistandsgiverne, de afrikanske regeringer, agroindustrien etc., er enige om, at det store problem i Afrika hedder produktivitet. Det er sådan, det fortælles.
So then what you have to do is you have to make the case for agroecology. That's what we actually try to do. So what we did as AFSA is collect cases from all over Africa, agroecology cases. So we collected those cases and did a meta-level analysis. You know, which one does better for feeding the people, productivity, health, nutrition, and income, environmental benefits, all those criteria. And in a state of only productivity, so there are other measuring indices. So when we compared that, we found agroecology to be much better. And we also looked at the Sustainable Development Goals, the 17 of them. And which one would address that? We could show that 11 of the Sustainable Development Goals are addressed by agroecology. When I was talking to university students at Yale University one time, and they said, why not for the others? Huh? Why did you leave the six? And I agree with them, you know. So one thing that you do is do the level of advocacy and collaborate with other European groups and US groups to do that, because the pressure has to be applied from so many places.
Noget af det, man er nødt til at gøre, er at samle cases inden for agroøkologi. Og det er også det, vi har gjort i AFSA. Samle agroøkologiske cases fra hele Afrika. Hvis vi sammenligner for eksempel på kriterier som ernæring, indtægt og miljøforhold, i stedet for udelukkende at måle på produktivitet, så er agroøkologi meget bedre. Og hvis man kigger på FN's verdensmål, så kan der leveres på 11 ud af de 17 mål. Det, man ellers skal gøre, er fortællervirksomhed.
But at the country level also, you know, you have to have places where agroecology works, and you have to also open yourself up and introduce some agricultural agroecology techniques. So we have collaborated with the Colombian agroecology experts, and they brought a lot of techniques, biofertilizer techniques, and we wanted to test whether it works in Africa. So we brought farmers. And these Colombian groups And the farmers loved it. They really loved it. So we had one huge meeting in Kenya, another one in Togo, another one in Benin, and another one is going to follow in Kenya, or maybe it has ended this week. And we are going to have it in Zimbabwe later in the year, in Zambia. You see, they're just spreading this kind of positive techniques.
På landeniveau er man nødt til at have steder, hvor agroøkologi virker, og man skal også udbrede teknikkerne. Vi har haft samarbejde med agroøkologi på et universitet i Colombia, og der er folk derfra, der er kommet til Afrika. Den agroøkologiske viden og teknikkerne er kommet ud til farmerne, og de syntes vældig godt om det. Efterfølgende er der afholdt flere større møder i Kenya, Benin, Zimbabwe og Zambia. Hvilken tilgang bruger I for at komme i kontakt med farmerne?
The farmers would come, the trainers would go to one village, and the other farmers would come. In Togo, in addition to farmers and university lecturers, and also extension agents did participate. And apparently it has changed them so much, so that they have asked the NGO who has coordinated this to come and give some lectures at the university also about that biofertilizer techniques. You see, so this is one way of us changing. The other thing that we are doing is build the civil society, association, which is a very critical thing to do. And a farmers association here, association there, creating a linkage among them at the country level and also at the continental level, which is much more hard to do. But we're managing, bit by bit, bit by bit. Now out of the 55 countries, we reach 50 of them. The other thing that we do is research, you know, organized research. So we did this making the case study research, you know, this case study analysis, and we did a policy analysis also, policy on land, policy on seed, policy on agroecology. So it's broad-based work that we do.
Det er trænere, som tager ud i landsbyerne, og så kommer landbrugerne. Der er også afholdt forelæsninger for studerende på universitetet. Det er blandt andet gjort i Togo, og der har været stor tilstrømning. Noget tredje, vi arbejder med, er kapacitetsopbygning i civilsamfundet, det vil sige i landbrugorganisationer. Vi etablerer samarbejde mellem landbrugorganisationer, både nationalt og interregionalt. Det er et meget større og vanskeligt arbejde. Men ud af 55 lande, så er vi i kontakt med 50. Og en fjerde ting, vi har gjort, er forskning. Jeg har lavet analyser af politik for landbrug, af politik for afgrøder og for frø, etc. Og I bruger deltagerbaseret kortlægning som redskab.
Ja, ja, ja. What they actually they show you how the food production landscape looks like some 50-60 years ago. They map that. Then they do the present. Mostly it's chaos, you know, the present is chaos. We have lost a lot of things. So after, you know, you spend enough time in discussing that, probably 2 days, 3 days sometimes, we don't rush it. It's very critical. Some people get, oh, map 2 hours. No, you have to stay there as much as possible with the community, take time to walk in the landscape. You know, you walk in the landscape, you come in, you take time. So we did map of the past, map of the present, and we did map of the future into scenarios. So they will show you the kind of future that you want. And in that, you have to include also other actors, no? The government is very important. If there are some friendly bodies, you have to include them somehow. So you do map of the future that they want, and you ask question, so what would prevent you from reaching there? What would be the blockage? And how can you clear those blockages? But my personal experience, because I was the head of a local NGO, Melka Ethiopia, for about 13 years, it was me who started it. Now we have over 40 staff, you know, all over the country, and we're working very, very closely with farmers, very much. And my personal experience, after this mapping, you have to also work with people. So the accompaniment is also very much important till they realize their their future and also get strong.
And you have done the same in Kenya as well?
I did it in Kenya. I participated in Kenya, Benin, in Ghana at some point, in South Africa, Zimbabwe.
Ja, vi beder folk om at lave kort over landskabet for fødevareproduktion. Først sådan, som det så ud for 50-60 år siden. Og bagefter laver de kort over landskabet, sådan som det ser ud i dag. Nutiden er ofte kaotisk. Der er meget, der er forandret og gået tabt, så det kræver tit 2-3 dage til debat. Det er meget vigtigt ikke at forhaste processen med kortlægning. Og til sidst laves der kort over fremtiden. Hvordan skal scenariet være fremover? Her er det vigtigt at inkludere mange forskellige aktører, især for eksempel lokale politikere, at gå rundt med dem i landskabet og diskutere barriere for planer med hensyn til fremtiden. Det er også vigtigt, at der laves follow-up bagefter med aktørerne, at der bliver støttet op omkring realiseringen af planer og beslutninger. Det er i hvert fald min erfaring efter 13 år som leder af en NGO i Etiopien. Og ja, jeg har også deltaget i tilsvarende kortlægningsprocesser i både Togo, Ghana, Zimbabwe og Sydafrika. Kan de små farmere føde verden? Altså, de gør det jo nu. De leverer omkring 75% af fødevareproduktionen globalt. Men vi romantiserer ikke de små farmere.
They are feeding it now. We're not romanticizing small-scale farming. It's possible to change it. To produce more also. It's possible. Our techniques are there. What is not there is a policy. The policy courage. You know, the policy makers are not convinced yet that that would work. So most of the research money, most of the introduction, the support goes to the other forms of farming. So there is little money to push that kind of farming. So that's a bigger problem.
Yeah. But is a door open in Ethiopia?
Very small, as compared to the other one. 95% for 5%. Even that is an optimistic estimate. Yeah. So we have to win the narrative.
De kan producere meget mere, end de gør nu, for teknikkerne er der. Men de politiske aktører er ikke overbevist om, at det kan lade sig gøre. Det meste bistand og støtte går jo til den anden type landbrug, omkring 95%. Så ja, i Etiopien er der en lille dør åben for agroøkologisk landbrug. Den er meget lille. Så vi er nødt til at vinde over den officielle politiske fortælling.
I har lyttet til den anden radios udsendelse Feed the World 3, Landbrug i Etiopien, konventionelt eller agroøkologisk. Det er simpelthen den tredje af fire udsendelser med fokus på fødevaresikkerhed og fødevaresystemer i globalt perspektiv. I udsendelsen medvirkede forsker Million Belay fra Stockholm Resilience Center. Christina Grossmann Due stod for tilrettelæggelsen, og udsendelsen er produceret med støtte fra stiftelsen Clara Lachmanns Fond.